Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 14.
Tatam yata kinchana yad vivakshataha pritak grisasta krita rupanadi nakari chitkvapecha dushtitamatir labeta vatahata no vivaspadam.
Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts within different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. It's quite a poetic statement. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord. It may seem exciting, so many things to discuss, so many things to say, interesting things. But all these things will simply agitate the mind, either in a positive way or in a negative way. Sometimes we think, yes, this is very nice, this is exciting, this is adventure, but actually, these adventures are like playing with the material energy without dealing with the real situation. Sometimes the material energy is described as not a very good situation. It is said like a log of wood that is burning at the end. On both sides, it's burning. In the middle, the ants, they're playing. So something like that. Or there are some other descriptions. The descriptions of a man who has fallen into a pit and he's hanging on this branch that he somehow managed to grab. Below, there is a huge, big black snake. As he looks up and thinking about how to climb out, there is a tiger looking over the edge of the hole. So the situation is somewhat complicated. Definitely, he has some complications in his life. But then over the hole there is a tree and there's a beehive. And just a drop of honey is falling onto his face. It's running down. Oh, what is that? Sweet. Very nice. So that's another famous Bengali drawing, which we find in sketch form in Navadvip. So in this way, the Gaudiya tradition brings us that vision of that life in the material world is fine. It is, one can have so many things. We are not against enjoyment. We are not against material desires. No problem at all. Material enjoyment, you want it, yes. You want material desires, no problem. But no sinful desires. No sinful enjoyment. That's where the borderline is. But that there is scope for enjoying the material energy, of course. That is not a problem. Because it's not by renunciation that one can attain to the spiritual world. It's by service and by love, by serving Krishna and developing love for Krishna, that we can rise above this material energy. It's only then that we'll naturally lose the taste for the lower things. Sinful activities are to be given up, and that may be difficult at first because we were accustomed for a long time to some forbidden activity. But those activities, they don't bring happiness. Sinful activities, they bring misery, they bring suffering, different types of suffering. So therefore, it's not much to give up, really. What we really give up is suffering.
And then?
Yes. Enjoyment? Fine. That will not be a problem. But even pious enjoyment can still capture the mind. Even that which is allowed can still capture the mind, and one starts dwelling on such enjoyment. Therefore, we see that some wise persons, they leave that also. They say, forget it, you know, why even bother with this enjoyment? Because even desires for material enjoyment, which is allowed, can never fully satisfy the mind anyway. So still, the mind is agitated, even though not sinful. That is the nature of material existence. So Vyasadeva had described so many Vedic literatures. It said all those Vedic literatures were simply condemned by Narada Muni here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions of the Vedic literature, and thus he had described transcendental realization in different ways, namely by fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Besides that, in his various Puranas, he had recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled how to fix their minds in the service of the Lord. They're always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Srila Narayana is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literatures compiled by Vyasadeva, and thus he's trying to emphasize describing everything in relation with the Supreme Lord and no one else. And that description is Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the description about Krishna and really no one else. It said Krishna is the origin of everything, everything in this world has its origin in Krishna. And Krishna is abhigya, he is all knowing. He knows everything about everything, simultaneously, fully conscious of everything that goes on with all living beings. Every thought in anyone's mind, Krishna knows. Or Krishna knows the movement of every atom. Krishna is fully conscious, but yet he is swarat, he's independent. He's not involved with these things. It's not Krishna is aloof, because Krishna is absorbed in his own transcendental pleasure pastimes.
And those are ultimately the activities that can give real satisfaction to anyone. So
we hear. We hear again and again from scriptures. Nothing can satisfy the heart other than devotional service. Yeah. What to say? What can we do? The best is to live in a place like Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, it's natural. It's Krishna consciousness. Even if you don't look for it, it's there. It's everywhere. Because that place is totally dedicated to Krishna. that. So, such an environment where one automatically remembers Krishna is the easy environment. When one lives in a place like anywhere in the Western world, it's different. Because in the Western world, we are bombarded with mundane information constantly. And we sort of get used to it. We sort of also look at it a bit here and there and everywhere. And Krishna consciousness, it's there. But it's sort of, it's a discipline. It only works with rules and a discipline and all these things. And that is sometimes difficult because we feel then that Krishna consciousness puts us into a rigid frame, into a rigid lifestyle that becomes suffocating, and we want more space to just express our own nature. And in this way, we are, our initial enthusiasm that drove us so far into Krishna consciousness reaches its counterpart, a saturation point. And we sort of get to a stage where we are not progressing so much and struggling to maintain. And then what? Yes, Vrindavan, oh, such a nice place. Because the culture is completely transcendental. Temples everywhere, so many days are celebrated. Now in June, great heat, and now in June, very soon, that midsummer is coming up. In Vrindavan, it's also celebrated. Here in Sweden, it's celebrated with an umbrella and a winter coat. Somehow or other that day, I learned my lesson. It's always miserable weather. But not in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, it's summer. There's no doubt about it. But it's a little hot, so what people do on that day, melons are distributed everywhere, all of Vrindavan, everywhere. Everyone is distributing melons, everyone's tasting melons, eating melons, 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 melons. So nice, just prasadam, of course, everything offered to Krishna. So in this way, the whole town is celebrating Krishna. And you go to the temples, and there are water sports. Some temples have waterfalls, some temple have a shower, a full-on shower, a bathroom shower in the middle of the temple. This is not a fan to cool down, no, a shower, just like on full blast constantly. You know how it is in India, it's like chalo. Let's go and just water everywhere. Everyone is ecstatic. What to say? Water pastimes to somehow or other. Cool the temples, cool the air, and cool the atmosphere for the Lord and his devotees. Krishna consciousness is natural. We may get knocked over by some rickshaw calling out Radhe. And that's only the external side. And there is a much deeper side, which is under the surface, the more eternal Vrindavan that one can possibly perceive a little bit, especially if one goes deeper in hearing and chanting. So there's an impetus. Where here, it may be different. It may be oftentimes material life everywhere, material desires everywhere, everyone else's. And when you see everyone else's material desires, then naturally the thought occurs, what about me? Don't I have those desires also? Maybe I do. Maybe I also. bombarded, and then, yes, chanting, struggle. The world is not designed for it. Where's the time? Work, paying bills, and so on in between. Squeeze some names, chant, oftentimes like this. So, what to do? So sometimes we experience spiritual life as a pressure in under these circumstances, as a struggle, and you just feel like, how can I go on? Or we feel, well, I will go on, but it's not exactly susukam kirtamaviyam, joyfully performed, as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. It should be, but it not always is. Therefore, we need to go. We need to go on pilgrimages. We need to somehow or other, by hook or crook, save money, save holidays, so that we can go on pilgrimages and then really spend our time well. On pilgrimages, spend our time to get the maximum amount of mercy. Because whatever we do there in the holy town will be nourishment for a long time. So that is not a luxury, that is a necessity. Of course, it's not just the holy town. There's also Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever we are discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are discussing pure devotional service, and we are discussing no compromise. I said Chamadi Ashya Yatun Vyat Itaratas Charte Swabik Isarat. I said Krishna is the origin of everything, everything is emanating from him, and I said that Krishna is somehow or other independent, because he's absorbed in his own activities in the spiritual world. Tene brahma ya adhikavye muyanti yat suryaha. Then all the living beings are here in this world, and they don't remember the spiritual reality, because they are influenced by material things, and these material things preoccupy their mind. They don't remember that Krishna is behind everything. Because they are in illusion. It is said that Tene Brahmaridaya Adhikavya, that Krishna is revealing that knowledge in the heart of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is alone in the universe in the very beginning, and Lord Brahma is not knowing what is the goal of life. He has no idea. Even he is covered by illusion. Because illusion is very different. One sometimes sees land on water, or water in one sees water on land. If you are in the ocean for a long time, you may see an island, but there is no island. But you may see land in the middle of the ocean. When you're in the desert, you may see water. All these things are, you look in fire and you see water in the fire. Somehow or other, all these things are part of illusion. But in spite of that illusion, it is said, one must fix his mind on param satyam dhimahi. One must meditate on the absolute truth. But how to do that? For Srimad Bhagavatam is about that, because it says in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada gives a foreword to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there he responds to that param satyam. And he is speaking about param satyam,
And he's basically explaining that Param Satya means the absolute truth. And that Srimad Bhagavatam explains how Param Satyam is Parameshwar, Sri Krishna, or how the absolute truth, Param Satyam, is the supreme controller, Param Iswara, Krishna. Then Srila Prabhupada explains, he said, when you speak about the absolute truth, it's difficult to understand what it is. Whether it has a form, whether it doesn't have a form, it could be anything. But when you speak about the supreme controller, and you speak about a person. A person is a controller. So Param Ishwar or Parameshwar is a controller, is a person. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing out the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is to establish that Param Satyam is Parameshwar, Sri Krishna. Krishna, the supreme controller, the supreme proprietor. So somehow or other, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is what changes the vision. It is Srimad Bhagavatam that makes it clear what is the goal of life. So this hearing of the Bhagavatam is the devotee's occupation. Somehow or other, again and again, Srimadam Swakata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtanam Rityanta Stoyavadra. It is vidunati suritsatam. It cleanses the heart from all the dust that is stuck there. Just like nowadays, even in India, this is dying out because now they also have these same modern blankets that we have everywhere made of some sort of artificial fiber. But previously they had quilts, razai, and filled with cotton. And then that would be put away during the summer and taken out again just before the winter. And then some people would walk through the street and they would carry a bowl with a string on it. And they would play that string, and it was quite a thick string, like made a deep kind of bass-like sound. Deep sound. And then people would call these people that walk through the streets and play their instruments, invite them to their houses, and these people would open up the quilts and they would play this the cotton. They would take the cotton over the string and the sound fluffed up the cotton, and like which had become pressed by too much use and so on. And then in that way the cotton was fresh again and loose and ready for another winter. That was the old system. And that was the vidunoti. Vidunoti is one name for this. Of course in different states it may be called by a different name, but it is also known by the name as vidunoti. So vidunoti suritsatam, that all the material impressions, they are pressed in the heart for a long time, like caked, stuck there, really stuck there. But by transcendental sound, it's sort of fluffed up, and it comes loose, all these this material influences. Then it can go, then it can go away, and eventually the heart gets cleansed from all these material contaminations by hearing. That's the promise. That's the promise. Krishna promises. So yes, the Bhagavatam gives us promises, and these promises are important. So we need a culture of hearing the Bhagavad culture. That is our main occupation, hearing and chanting, somehow or other, hearing from the Bhagavad, chanting the holy name, that will make the difference. It's culture that makes it easy. Without culture, it's if we are in a culture which is not supporting Krishna consciousness, it's difficult. It's just difficult to go against the culture. Imagine you would have been Krishna conscious 5,000 years ago. You could have eaten anything, mostly, right? Anywhere. You know, you didn't have to read all the labels, and you know, it's like, you know, you didn't have a problem with a family member. What would you like? Water. You know? Because there's nothing they cook that we can eat, nothing they keep in the house that is pure. So what to do? But then it must have been so much easier. And it is so much easier. Even in India, it is so much easier in a way. In India, yes, so many people are still vegetarian. It's not like so difficult to be a vegetarian. You can get something. Easier, supportive culture. So we need to create a culture. That is our next challenge. Our next challenge is a culture. Srila Prabhupada gave teachings and he also gave the roots of a culture. But it was a bit, maybe in its early stages, didn't go. He gave a dress, a certain, but it's a bit narrow and a bit extreme to always walk in a dress like this, you know, wherever you are, and people responding to you, sort of intense. Sometimes it's nice to be anonymous. Yes. So I remember when we lived in Vrindavan, you know, one day, while we were living there in our Krishna Balaram Mandir, which is a temple, there is a big ashram, there are maybe some 400 resident devotees, there's a school, the kids, so it was like maybe altogether 600 people living in the temple, then devotees lived around the temple in private houses, so we had a whole community there. And we were living like that in our Krishna world, Krishna culture. Everything is in Vrindavan. Their fishing is not allowed. If you go fishing in the Yamuna, I think some fishing, you'll get arrested. You get arrested, put you in jail for that. Right? Fishing, strictly forbidden. Right? The sweepers, they eat hogs, right? That's allowed. But no butcher shops, nothing like that. So Vrindavan in that way is not providing for these things. So if we have a culture, if we have a culture that is just where everything is, where there's so many vegetarian things, where there is spiritual art, spiritual music, a culture of spiritual friendship, all these things is what will make a difference. So it's nice to have a transcendental philosophy, but then we need a culture to make it easier, so that we don't have to struggle, so that we don't have to fight against the current of the river, against the current of the environment we live in. Now, we're going against the current. Against the current of the world. Even India now is catching up very fast with Western morality. And I'm not saying even Western things, but Western morality now becomes the new way of life.
so quick. And then Krishna consciousness, more conservative than our grandparents or great-grandparents, right? Krishna consciousness, so strict. It's true that those who have studied new religious movements, they call the Hare Krishna movement a new religious movement because it's new in the West. And they say that this is like amongst the most fanatic ones. Yeah. It is amongst the most fanatic ones when it doesn't have a culture, when it only has a philosophy and ideas and rules. But when it has a culture, oh, that's what people will be interested in. So we need more of a culture. Actually, the Prabhupada gave the seed of all these things, communities. He wanted farms, and on farms he wanted spiritual communities. But, you know, I travel around the world and you can see many ISKCON farms, and you usually if I come to a farm where I haven't been, then generally it's like, that's the ISKCON there, and that's the land of the neighbors? Yeah, that's right, how do you know? That's easy. The land of the neighbors is all green and grown up with so many things, and then the ISKCON land is sort of bushy and not so much growing, and a little bit, what shall we say, kind of neglected, you know. There's a few lost grains here and there, but not highly impressive, definitely smaller than those of the neighbors. Of course, they say they use fertilizers. Okay, yeah, fair enough. But even biological farms don't look like ours. So that may not be the ultimate excuse. It's more, it's just too difficult. It's too much farming. Who wants to do it? But it is a fact that heroes are those who go on the land and live from the land. They are heroes. Heroes are also those who go to China or to deep dark Africa and to kind of go to remote villages. Those are also heroes. But Prabhupada wanted such communities. We didn't do it. We lagged behind. If we would have that now, ecological communities, Prabhupada said, bullock power, living with no electricity, just with castor oil for light. Imagine, we would have done it. Now people would come from everywhere to see it. Imagine Amviks would be like that. Right? Not that I'm criticizing Amviks, but that's not my point. But imagine it would be like that. It would be famous. The world would be talking about it. Right? Wherever, you know, the world would come, people would come from anywhere to see it, to experience it, to live there, if we would have had that. If only we would have had the courage to do what Prabhupada said. So it's waiting. It's just waiting for someone to say, okay, I'll do it. Look, here I come. This is not a lecture about ecology is the way. Hallelujah. You know, that's not what it is. It is a lecture about culture. So, not only ecology. Music. Oh, yes. I mean, we all like really nice music, so it's a fact that kirtan is our music, so we need some more variety and so on, and it's there. And we have a kirtan culture, and that sort of helps to all the different flavors that we have. It helps to create a culture. Because what is a culture? A culture has two aspects to it. One, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami gives a definition of culture. And that definition is the definition of cultivation as an environment in which we can naturally cultivate our Krishna consciousness. And I spoke about that so far. I've kind of sketched it with Vrindavan and so on. And then the other aspect of culture is that it gives a means of expression of human nature within safe boundaries. That's the other thing that culture does. Human nature needs to be expressed, but boundaries need to be there. Otherwise, it goes out of hand. And we get to an animalistic platform. That's what distinguishes human beings from animals, this culture. So we need spiritual culture. If you want spiritual life, then that is. And for these two things, to express human nature and to cultivate our Krishna consciousness. It's like Bhakti Chiru Maharaj start doing these seminars on the Mahabharata, right? And he really knows a lot about the Mahabharata. So then I was saying this, one day I was saying, I said, you're really an expert at the Mahabharata, Maharaj. And then he said, my grandmother used to tell us all these stories, right? I just grew up like that, hearing it hundreds of times. What a way to grow up, isn't it? Hundreds of times. And we have another sannyasi. He joined in Vrindavan later, and I was there at the time when he came, and I interviewed him when he first came to the temple and wanted to join the temple. And then he told me he was from Orissa, just outside of Jagannath Puri. And he explained that he would always hear the Ramayana. Next door to him, there was a place where they were just reciting the Ramayana every day. So he's always listening to the Ramayana, 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 Ramayana. And eventually it fructified and brought him to Vrindavan. While he was studying, he just heard the Ramayana. Maybe he failed his exam because of it. And then he had to join the ashram in Vrindavan, whatever it might be. I'm not sure. I guess he passed. Because in India, everyone passes their exams. It's like the Indian motto is, you study until you can study no more. Until you reach the limit. Now what? That's the way it goes. But anyway, so that is what is lacking. That's what's lacking. People think that what is lacking is determination to chant. Such a struggle to chant these 16 rounds. I don't know if I have the determination. No, it's not that what is lacking. It's the culture. It's the culture that is lacking. If there's a culture, if there's a Krishna conscious drama once a week, and it becomes a whole thing, it becomes a culture, we want to see. We want to see. And the actors begin to, if they play the whole Ramayana, they begin to so much identify with it, or the Chaitanya Bhagavat, or whatever. They begin to so much identify with it. They become really absorbed. It's about culture. And everyone becomes captured by culture. And once we are captured by culture, like that, by spiritual culture, then spiritual practice comes natural. Then chanting becomes easier. Everything becomes easier. But it's because we practice a spiritual life with principles, but stripped from culture, and that we are struggling so much. It's not only that we are struggling with our material desires. We're struggling because we are culturally impoverished. That's one point I wanted to share with you, just as a thought, you know, so something to think about. And our community is essential. And this morning, well, in Dutch we have a proverb, is throw a stick amongst the chickens. Let's see what happens. You throw a stick. like you get a lot of discussion. That's for sure. So sometimes it usually refers to some remark people make, you know. Like so this morning, Brahma Muhurta threw a stick amongst the chickens by speaking about a letter and friendship that was lacking in the community. That also is part of a culture. It's really part of a culture of always inviting devotees for prasadam. Somehow, brother. See, and if we always invite devotees for prasadam, then friendships develop. But it's just culture. That's our culture. Should always be some guests. And if there's always some guests, you know, for prasadam, friendships develop. That's traditional culture. But all these things are now disappearing. India is making so much progress. Now they also have health insurance and all these things. Yes. Very nice. Yes, and the families are now also breaking apart. Yes. Very nice. Just like in Sweden, where the family has become sort of not so relevant. It's the social system. So we need to show another culture. Anyway, that's my topic for the day. So any comments now or questions?
When you're talking about culture, some part of the culture must also behavior. Proper or decent behavior. And I tried to picture Srila Prabhupada like your grandfather who told us how to behave, how to eat, how to dress, how to be a proper devotee. And I tried to draw a parallel to this new idea that some devotees, they try to throw away the nice Vedic dress and they think that they can attract more people. I mean, if you can make a short parallel to Krishna West, because I tried to. So much
Krishna West, second time people ask me on the camera. This last time was in German, this time in English. Well, I'm better prepared now. I think we should first of all appreciate that the person who inspires this idea of practicing Krishna consciousness in Western dress is a very senior member of our movement and a highly intelligent, you know, cultured, I mean, intellectual person, right? Udayananda Maharaj. So, therefore, we want to try and understand, and then we may have our personal opinions about the matter. I think that. Prabhupada addressed it, that it is all right. When Prabhupada came to Germany and met Sachinandan Maharaj's father, then, you know, his son had just become a devotee and Sachinandan his father asked a question to Prabhupada, and the question was, how can a crocodile survive in the Rhine? Yeah. And Prabhupada said, his answer was, it's not required to wear this dress. One can also be in plain clothes and be a devotee. There are many quotes, but this story is a little dramatic. Satchinanda's father was, Maharaj's father was very impressed and said, "Oh, your guru is very intelligent." Because he understood that question, a crocodile in the Rhine. So, all right, there is scope for that. But we see that many spiritual traditions in the world have two sides to it. A monastic side of a priestly class that wear kind of some uniform, some spiritual, some dress standing for spirituality that distinguishes them from the world and gives them their spiritual identity. And another feature is the secular feature. So I think that the Krishna West approach to Krishna consciousness is going to be the secular feature of the movement at best, and has always been, because it's not a new invention, it was already there. It's just sort of the idea is formalized a bit more. But you know all about Krishna West, because most of your time you're dressed in the Krishna West uniform. No? So the secular aspect. Now the secular aspect of Krishna consciousness is a transplant. It is a crocodile that has been put into the Rhine. It is another culture, another tradition. The dress, this kind of more, well, what is our idea of a Vedic dress? I mean, the kurta, as Vidyananda Maharaj rightly points out, is a Muslim invention. Very close. And the cholis are also not exactly Vedic, right? But, saris and some sort of dhoti, lungi, or whatever, that sort of goes back to a more traditional thing. Chadar. Now, very traditional. It was born out of another culture. The clothes that they come out of a culture. This was born out of a culture that tried to regulate sexual activity, and therefore wasn't putting it so much out into the public. And therefore, certain parts of the bodies are nicely covered. Like this cloth is different than tight jeans, which kind of display whatever is there, right? Or t-shirts. Right? When ladies walk around in tight jeans and tight t-shirts and nothing under it, and chant Hare Krishna at the same time, it's nice to chant Hare Krishna. But the dress is of a different culture, a culture that deals with sexuality in a different way. Now, when I brought up this argument to Vidyananda Maharaj, he pointed out, yes, I'm not saying we should wear those kind of clothes. I'm talking about sattvic Western clothes, right? Something in the mode of goodness. All right, nice, better than those other clothes that incite passion, right? I can imagine that many people, right, who are in positions in the world could relate much easier to Krishna consciousness if it wasn't in such an oriental religious guise, if it was just a little more integrated. So for those people, it's good. But I also think that, as all traditions of the world show, that the monastic the monastic aspect of a spiritual tradition, they are the people that are full-time dedicated to it without having to compromise with society. They've withdrawn from society. They are spending all their time with the spirituality, and they become the spiritual leaders, the inspiration for the secular practitioners. So I think that's in my estimation, the best we can expect from Krishna West, with all due respect to the efforts that are there. I think it's nothing new and sounds more dramatic than it is. I think that I found myself that I'm a sannyasi by vows. The vows are strict. Now, if I would just dress in jeans or in regular clothes, I would find that a burden. I would find, if I would just let my hair grow and a little beard, I would lose a certain amount of self-discipline. Yeah. I find that even, you know, if every once in a while I shave my head, and it reconfirms my self-discipline. So I find I get benefit from all these practices on a personal level. So therefore I'm quite convinced that it's beneficial. I will not now enter into the argument whether these clothes are really spiritual or not. That's another aspect of the discussion which I will not touch upon now. But this was, I leave it at this. Yeah. Well, the core of it has to be around hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. Yeah. So we can help to create facilities for hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. And whether you want to do that in a traditional setting like here, you know, where someone sits on an elevated seat or, you know, gives a formal lecture, or whether you just want to do that by at home and inviting people at home and just to have a little kirtan, discuss a verse and ask at least a few people to say something about it and have some prasad, simple things. Or you can, Prabhupada spoke about Gita Nagari. In the late 50s, Prabhupada wrote a paper called Gita Nagari about villages which were dedicated to the Gita. And then later in America, he made this farm called Gita Nagari. So he sort of tried to start it. And he wanted Gita Nagaris everywhere, villages that were like based on the Bhagavad Gita, dedicated to Bhagavad Gita. Start a village. Yeah, if you want to do something. Or, you know. So it depends. You know, there's so many things we can do. Right? You can go on a camel to Mongolia and, you know, preach to the people in the Gobi Desert, you know. I mean, what do you want? Or you can just stay in Stockholm and just do something in Hare Krishna Center. The thing is, do something that you can do, and keep it up. That's it. So,
Vrindavan Dham, what to do to get Krishna's mercy, more Krishna's mercy?
Ah, what to do in Vrindavan when we visit there to get more of Krishna's mercy? Hearing, chanting, service. These are the key elements. Hearing, chanting, remembering, and serving Krishna in some way or other. When we are there, our main business is to chant, to hear about Krishna, to really, that's the main thing in Vrindavan. Honor the Mahaprasad. Hearing, chanting, remembering, and service. Same as here. Not any different, really. The only difference there is it's easier because the environment is so transcendental and the culture is so transcendental. Imagine Vrindavan was only forest. Okay? It would be more difficult for us. Dry, hot forest. But all these temples are there, all these holy places are there. So the temples and the holy places are all culture. Yeah, all these devotees are there. Radhe, Radhe. Yeah, so it's all this culture of worshipping Krishna. See the energy. A lot of the energy from Vrindavan comes actually from the culture, you see. And then underneath it is the Dham. Yeah. So, same as here. Hearing, chanting, remembering, and serving. But there it's more powerful results. Okay. We still do something after this? What do we do?
Kirtan.
Kirtan, stand up, Kirtan.